All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and today's program is kind of, we're going to go back into the past and pull one of our pre-recorded programs from April 2016. It's one of the advantages of doing over 1,000 programs over the last 20 years. But I think you're really going to enjoy this one. It's called Humor in Uniform, and we're featuring two authors, Bob Woosley and Mark Benevuto. So the first book is titled The General's Briefer by Bob Woosley. And he was at the Pentagon for 2 years in the mid-60s. And it says here that he entered the Army at the height of the Vietnam War. He was a klutz with a little brains, made it through basic infantry training, was lucky enough to be assigned as an oral briefing officer to the general staff. His only duty was to announce the ultra-top-secret world news every morning. From the hush-hush black book, he takes us through his personal hell at Fort Benning and his eventual triumph as a favorite newscaster to the Chief of Army Intelligence. He poignantly describes the astonishing events of those times as well, including the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, riots at the Chicago Democratic Convention, the hippie march on the Pentagon, the rise of Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein, and the day that we put men on the moon. It's a wonderful lifetime of history that takes place in just 2 years. I think this book is really interesting when he talks about military intelligence. So stick around for that one. The second portion of the program is Mark Benevuto, and his is called Twists and Tales from VMI. And it's VMI is the Virginia Military Institute. And it is, sort of like a West Point Citadel type of place. But it's just a compilation of stories of his times at VMI, starting off when he was a first-year student when they were called rats, and going on through the next years. It's anybody who's ever been to college at all, or especially to a military school, can relate to some of these stories that 18 and 19-year-olds can come up with their imaginations. And this is what Mark Benevuto tells us with his Twisted Tales from VMI. So stick around for that. I think you'll like it. All right. The other thing is that toward the end of today's program, we are going to be paying a tribute to Merle Haggard. And this might sound a little strange, but Merle passed away in April of 2016. And when we did this program, we paid a little homage to Merle Haggard. And I think you'll like that song. That's the way the program's going to end. So hopefully you'll enjoy what we're doing today. As I mentioned, these are from 2016. Before we get into the program, I have to make sure that we thank our sponsors, because we just can't do this program without them and without you and your support. So from the corporate side, we've got Legal Help for Veterans, and they specialize in veterans' disability claims. Call Legal Help for Veterans at 800-693-4800. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. If you want to do business with the federal government or some corporations and you want to claim to be a veteran-owned business, you've got to get certified. These are the folks that can do that for you. So give NVBDC a call at 888-237-8433, or you can go to their website. Again, that's nvbdc.org. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information, you go to the va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. We also want to thank our longtime sponsors. These guys were there right at the beginning of the whole adventure that we call Veterans Radio. And these are the Irwin Preskin American Legion Post 46 and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. As I said, we can never have even gotten on the air without the help of these men and women of these organizations. By the way, if you would like to become a sponsor or a donor to Veterans Radio, you can just go to our website. That's veteransradio.net. Click on the donate button and your donation will be tax deductible, because Veterans Radio is a nonprofit corporation, a 501c3. And of course, we always need your support. We've got a couple of events that are coming up that I wanted to promote just briefly. I believe it's on July 9th, we're going to be celebrating our 1,000th episode of Veterans Radio. It's hard to believe, right? How many radio shows last 20 years? That's the other thing. This is our 20th year. We started in November of 2003, and we've been going since. A couple of changes in hosts and so forth, but it's still our passion is still there to tell the story of America's veterans, to help out veterans any way that we can. And again, if you would want to support that mission that we are on, feel free to click on that donate button and let us know. The other thing is, you know, we've been telling these veteran stories, as I mentioned, for the 20 years. But if you have a story you would like us to tell, please, please contact us. Send me an email. Send it to dale@veteransradio.net. And we promise that we'll follow up on it. We're trying to get, you know, we've got how many veterans are left out there, but we've got an all bunch of stories. We've still got some World War II veterans right up until today's Iraq-Afghanistan veterans. And we'd really like to start telling more stories of the current generation of America's heroes. So, again, send your notification to us at dale@veteransradio.net or go to veteransradio.net and click on the contact button, and we can do that for you. All right, so here we go. From April 10th, 2016, this is Humor in Uniform.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program.
It's Dale Throneberry. Is he going to be your host today? I'm not sure where our announcer went. He must have stepped out of the room for a moment. Anyway, you're listening to Veterans Radio, and we want to welcome all of you to our program today. We're very excited to have you here in beautiful downtown Ann Arbor, where it is snowing. That's right, it's April 10th, and it's snowing. But what else is going on in the world? It's kind of a strange place out there. And we've got a couple of really great guests. The theme of our program today is humor in uniform, and we want to have a good time. So we've got a couple of great guests. We've got Bob Woolsey, and Bob wrote a book entitled The General's Briefer, and just reading the book is it's a very funny book, and he talks about his experiences working in Army intelligence. I know, ba-bump, bump, yes. We will be talking about that in a little bit when after we take our first break. And during the second half of the program, we've got Mark Benevito, and Mark is going to be talking about his experiences at the Virginia Military Institute, and we'll talk more about that with Mark in the second half of the program. But you can always follow us, and we're always interested in hearing from you. We'd love to get our story ideas from you because those are the best kind. We love telling the stories of America's veterans and military, and we can get them from you. They're even better than if we dig them out ourselves. So, again, you can send me an email at dale@veteransradio.net. We are going to take our first break, and then we'll be right back with my first guest, Bob Woolsey, and you're listening to Veterans Radio. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and I have the privilege of talking to another Jersey boy today, as one being from New Jersey, so we'll be able to talk a little bit about that as well. But my guest is Bob Woolsey, and I've got a great background here. Let's see, graduated from St. Peter's College in Jersey City. He majored in German classical literature. He was awarded a Fulbright scholarship to study in Germany, and while abroad, he traveled extensively throughout Europe. He's fluent in Italian and German and Jerseyese. After returning to the U.S., he studied law at the University of Virginia Law School, got his J.D. in 1967, and then I think he made a misstep somewhere along the line, and he entered the United States Army Intelligence Corps as a first lieutenant in 1968, serving for 2 years as a briefing officer to the general staff at the Pentagon. So, Bob, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
Very good, thanks.
How are things in Jersey?
It's not snowing. It's a little cold. It's about 60 degrees, I guess. But it's as long as it doesn't snow, we can get through April.
I think we'll be all right.
I think so. I totally agree. Being from Jersey myself, I can relate to the whole thing about that fine state.
Good.
So
nice to hear that.
Well, I do. I like, people don't understand it, you know, that New Jersey is a beautiful state. You can go skiing, you can go to the shore, you can do anything you want pretty much in New Jersey.
Sure.
It's a great place. So tell me about this experience that you had after you went to college. Did you go through college on a ROTC program?
Yes, I did. I went and they sort of guaranteed me a post in Germany this was in the early 60s. So you could just sort of pick out where you wanted to go. And in the early 60s, even though there was a draft, they said, sure, you can go to Germany. And then Vietnam came along, and between college and the grant to Europe, I went to law school beginning in 1964. I didn't like law school very much, but it beat Vietnam, and they kept promising us that the war is going to be over.
Yeah, that's what they told me, too. I applied. I asked for Germany, but I didn't get it. Oh, well.
Yeah.
So once you're back, and you have to end up going. Where did you do basic training, or was it basic training or officer training?
Yes, it was. I guess I don't know what the difference is, but it was basic training. You know, we had to run through, do the mile and run the obstacle course, and the map location and things like that. And I was very poor at that, and I couldn't run. And fortunately, the job that I got was at the Pentagon. You didn't need to run. All you had to do was talk. So I was the world's worst. If your definition of a soldier is a guy who fights a rifle and is able to find someplace, it wasn't me. But I got, they had an odd way of selecting people to go to Washington. And I asked the colonel who was in charge of our unit at the Pentagon why he picked me. He said, well, you were a lawyer, and we need somebody in the oral briefers department at our unit. And so we picked you. And so I spent 2 years, very good years, at between July 68 and March 70.
Well, your experiences, you also had some interesting experiences, though, down in Georgia at Fort Benning.
Oh, yes. But the first several chapters are about my experiences at Fort Benning, going there and with the map, getting lost with the maps and, attacking the hell. And but I made it through. All you had to do was just make it through. I was an intelligence officer. I wasn't an infantryman. But everybody, they didn't want people that were, out of shape. I could understand that. So they gave us basic training for 10 weeks, and then they sent us to intelligence school, which was really easy.
What would intelligence school include?
It was how to interrogate a prisoner. Everything then was Vietnam, and it was find out certain things. I wasn't cleared for the high kind of intelligence that I was going to be briefing at the Pentagon, but it gave you basic intelligence. I can't even recall what it was. All I know is, interrogating people who were prisoners of war, things that I really never had to use when I was briefing. And I did six weeks of it. It was just sort of to get your feet wet in the intelligence business. And then I got word that I was going to the Pentagon. I said, this is great. I'm only 250 miles from home, and it's not Germany, but it's pretty nice.
It wasn't too shabby. So what would describe your first couple of days at the Pentagon?
Yeah, well, fortunately, I was there a couple of weeks before the big head of intelligence, General McChrystian, arrived. He came up with Westmoreland, and he was the head of intelligence. In the beginning, I would get in and 3:30 in the morning, and my boss and I would compile an oral briefing, and this was 10 or 12 minutes of people who were, officers who were sort of falling asleep, and we keep them awake for a while. But this all changed when General McChrystian got in. He wanted to see the briefing. I mean, he actually took an interest in it. So he said, well, you got 20 expert desk officers, and we had desk officers from Japan and China and Latin America, Vietnam, of course, South Asia, and the general was pretty smart. He says, well, why you have these two guys here for producing a briefing for the morning. Well, why don't they rely on their desk officers? So from now on, they read what the desk officers give them. So that's what I did. So from late July or the beginning of August 1968, I would just read from what we call the Black Book. And that was 15 minutes of stuff. A lot of it was Vietnam, but, you know, Middle East, you know, there were skirmishes between Syrian and Israeli troops and student unrest in South America. And the two biggest events that happened weren't in Vietnam when I was in the service. They were the Chinese and Soviets had a little war.
Right.
And the Soviets and the Warsaw Pact forces invaded Czechoslovakia. And
how did the Pentagon react to that? I mean, I know that in our experience here talking to people on Veterans Radio, we found it, you know, the one thing that the military does is they plan for pretty much any possibilities out there.
Well, we had plans. We had all sorts of intelligence sources, but we were surprised by the Czechoslovakian invasion, and we had a special briefing on it, and I went in to see the Eastern European desk analyst. I said, what happened? He said, we were all caught with our pants down. We didn't know that the Russians and the Warsaw Pact were going to invade Czechoslovakia, so this briefing is courtesy of the New York Times. So we had a couple of facts that was top secret code word that we threw in to make it sound like it was top secret. But we just didn't realize the Soviets had been planning war games. We knew about these war games, but suddenly they turned the war games into an actual invasion.
Into a real
live war game. And so they invaded Czechoslovakia along with Poland and Hungary and East Germany. And I got a call around 2 o'clock in the morning. We said, you know, you got to come in a few hours to talk about this invasion of Czechoslovakia by all the rest of Eastern Europe.
Wow. We're talking with Bob Woolsey here on Veterans Radio, and his new book is called The General's Briefer, and his job was to take all the information from all these various expert people in the Pentagon and, I guess, put together a 15-minute presentation every day that you would give to just the head of the security? Or who did you give this to? Everybody?
Well, I give it to, first of all, the main briefing was that the Assistant Chief of Staff of Intelligence, who was a two-star general called Joseph McChristian. He reported directly to General Westmoreland. And then we give a courtesy briefing to a three-star general. I think his name was Stilwell. He was the son of the World War II, Stilwell. And we give him a briefing around 8 o'clock. So between all our work was done between 5:30 and, say, 8:30. It was very hectic for about particularly putting the book together. But after the 8:30, when you come back from that briefing to the head of operations for the Army, we'd get talk to the colonel a little about what happened that morning, and that was it. And so we had other things we had to do. We had to deliver this black book to different generals, like in Baltimore and different places around the D.C. area. And I tell one of the chapters where I had to deliver it to Fort Oliver, which is around Baltimore, handcuffed to my wrist.
Oh, one of those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was the handcuff. And the key stayed at ISB, which was our office. And I had to do everything with that damn briefcase. I had to eat with it, and that was because I didn't want to lose it. So I had to go to the bathroom with it. And I tell about
You have some very very interesting stories in the book, it sounds like you had a pretty good time.
Yeah, I mean, some of the best people I've met. I mean, we were at the Pentagon. I mean, of course, it's like every place else. You know, you have good guys, you have bad guys.
Yeah.
But most of the guys in our office were pretty good. The head of the office was very good, and you know, I'm not going to say 9-to-5 job, but it was early. But we only worked 5 days a week. We didn't work Saturday or Sunday, and we didn't live. It was the Pentagon, so I lived in a high rise in Arlington for most of the time there.
Well, that's not too shabby.
No, and I got paid for all this.
That wasn't too bad. Now tell me, when were you at the Pentagon?
I was at the Pentagon from early July 1968 until March 1970.
And you mentioned the reason I asked that question is. You know, many of our listeners are our age, And, yeah. You know, they lived through that time period. And I wanted you to, because you give us a perspective of not only what was going on with the generals, but what was going on in the country at the same time. So you, starting in 1968 was when things really went bad.
There was a bad year. They say, you know, we had all sorts of, Martin Luther King was killed, Bobby Kennedy was killed, the Soviets invaded Czechoslovakia. But you know, we had good times. Later on, when I was there, we put a man on the moon.
Yes.
And it wasn't all bad. And so I, one thing, the reason that I like it, because General McChrystian, who was the intelligence chief, well, liked me. For some reason, he thought that I was a good briefer. And he even asked me to brief on the Czechoslovakian situation. Mm-hmm. So I sort of enjoyed myself. A lot of the book tells not only of my days at the Pentagon, but the Army is very great with vacations. They gave it a month a year.
Right.
So I had vacations. You know, you could take planes, and they provided free flights, the cargo planes, to Europe. You could get on there for nothing. And so it was a fine time. And, you know, as I said, it was... And Washington, D.C. was only 3 hours from home. So I had a fine time. I you know, unfortunately, a lot of people who were in the Army at that time had to go to Vietnam.
Right, yeah. We've talked to a few of them, too.
Yeah.
But the what I wanted you to talk about is some of these adventures that you did have. You mentioned that, you know, you were able to catch flights overseas, and I thought you were, if I remember reading it, you were going to meet somebody over there, and you didn't quite hook up until the end of the time period?
Yeah, well, there's a chapter in the book where I talk about, but we explored where to go. Because I only had flights to Rio de Janeiro, but there weren't too many of these things. But there was always a flight to Frankfurt. Frankfurt was sort of like the hub. And we figured, okay, we could take a flight to Frankfurt, we'll get there, and... we'll take a train south to Costa del Sol, or Sol, or someplace in Spain. And it'll be nice and warm weather in May, and we had it all planned out. Unfortunately, the flights were restricted in the beginning because there was hazardous cargo on board.
Oh,
okay. The only thing that was flammable, you couldn't get on. So we had to hang around in Dover, Maryland for 3 or 4 days. Then I went to Europe. I got the flight, went to Germany. There were 4 of us going over. I got the flight with the guy I liked the least among the 4 of us. So I went to Frankfurt with him and said, a day, and I said, we got to split up. You know, we're not getting along. So I left him. You know, I called up. He was staying in the hotel. And so then I went to visit an Army buddy from Fort Benning who had been stationed in Germany. Then I visited my family in Italy, and we traveled around a little bit, and I came home. But the cargo, the flights weren't too bad. I mean, if you could catch a flight over there and catch a flight back, you'd save a lot of money.
Yeah, I am sure that you would. Well, after you spent 2 years in the service, what did you do when you got out?
Well, after that, I went to become a lawyer. I got out in 1970, hunted around. And, of course, military experience didn't have any,
right, yeah.
Didn't hold any water with any law firms. But I finally got different positions in different firms. And I became a trust and estates lawyer. And I was pretty good at it. And I was a trust and estates lawyer from, I was in downtown New York on Wall Street for about 30 years, I guess.
Oh, okay. So are you retired now? Do you still live in Jersey?
Sort of semi-retired, yeah. Well, I don't go into any of this in the book, but you know the exemptions now for I was pretty good at getting people estate tax savings. But exemptions are so big now for a married couple; it's like $11 million.
Right.
I don't know anybody has $11 million.
I don't know too many myself.
It was a little different, and you know, when you had exemptions of $1 million, mm-hmm. $1.5 million. Too. There were some people. There were people that had that kind of money. Not too many people have 11, so you don't have to have too many people that need an estate plan. First of all, if you're leaving money all to your wife,
right? Yeah,
that's $11 million tax-free anyway. And you've got an exemption of like $5.5 million. So there isn't any planning anymore.
So I
do some work for some other attorneys, you know, things like closings and some estate planning, wills.
Okay, and you write books.
And I write books, yeah. I'm trying to sell books.
Oh, well, we're working on that for you. Well, we'll see what we can do with that. We got a couple of minutes to go. So tell me, why did you sit down and finally write this adventure of your life? We got 2 minutes.
Okay. I wrote that book a long time ago. It's called No Fighting in the War Room. Oh. It didn't sell, but I had faith in it. I said, I think this is a pretty funny book, and I think it's something that people would want to read. So why go and get a book out that's not proofread or edited?
Right.
So what I did was I had the thing proofread and edited, made it hardcover, and decided to put it on the market. And I gave it to people, and people liked reading it, and they liked Vietnam. It was long ago, but not all that far. And things were, we have things in common, you know, like there was a riot at the Chicago convention. Who knows? There could be a riot at the Republican convention this year.
There might be. Things have a tendency to repeat themselves as we're finding out.
They do, yeah. We had an unpopular war in South Vietnam. Now we have an unpopular war in the Middle East. We don't want to be in Iraq, I don't think. We're there, and we're in Afghanistan. But I don't know. It does tend to repeat itself. And people, I think... I wrote the book as a funny book. It's a funny book,
and I have to kind of end our interview quickly because I'm getting jumped on from across the room.
Okay.
The name of the book is The General's Briefer by Bob Woolsey. You can find it on Amazon. You can find it on our website. Please check it out. I found it to be a very humorous book. Bob, thank you very much for being on our program, and let us know if we can help you out in the future.
Thank you so much.
All right. All right, we will be back in just a moment with our second half of our program, and our guest is going to be Mark Benvenuto, excuse me. And we're going to be taking a look at the Virginia Military Institute. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. PFC Sammy Davis is often called the real Forrest Gump. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Davis enlisted in the Army. He volunteered for the artillery because his father had been an artilleryman in World War II and then asked to be sent to Vietnam. In November 1967, his unit was helicoptered into Fire Base Cudgel. Shortly after midnight, Battery C came under a heavy mortar attack. At the same time, 1,500 Viet Cong launched an intensive ground assault. Davis's squad was operating a 105mm howitzer that fired 18,000 beehive darts in each shell. When he saw how close the VC were, he took over a machine gun and provided cover for his crew. Convinced they couldn't survive the attack, he rammed a shell into the gun and fired point blank into the enemy. A mortar round exploded nearby, knocking Davis to the ground, but he got up and kept firing the howitzer. When he ran out of beehives, he fired a white phosphorus shell, and then the last round he had, a propaganda shell filled with leaflets. He heard yelling from the other side of the river, and despite the fact that he couldn't swim, paddled across on an air mattress. Other GIs followed him. He found three wounded soldiers, gave them morphine, and provided covering fire as another GI helped one of the wounded across the river. Davis pulled the other two through the water on the air mattress and resumed the fight. Just before dawn, Davis was wounded in the back and buttocks by friendly fire. President Johnson presented him the Medal of Honor on November 19, 1968. Footage of LBJ putting the medal around Davis's neck appeared in the movie Forrest Gump, with Tom Hanks' head substituted for Davis's. Gump's fictional citation was loosely based on Davis's real one.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. Even small actions can make a world of difference. If you know a veteran in crisis, please call the Veterans Crisis Line, 800-273-8255. 800-273-8255. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're playing a little Army theme, although it probably would not necessarily appropriate. I couldn't find a VMI fight song that I could download quickly enough. But joining me now on Veterans Radio is Mark Benvenuto. I'll get it right one of these days, Mark. He's the author of a funny little book titled Twisted Tales from VMI, Real Life Stories from the Virginia Military Institute. And a couple of comments here by his buddies. It looks like it says one said, I laughed till I stopped. Me too. Written proof to my roommate was in serious need of some psychiatric help. That was from one of his roommates. The funniest thing I've read since the last funny thing I read. The one I liked was, I am now convinced that my brother Rat was dropped on his head as a youngster many, many times. Then there's a little clip at the bottom of the back cover of the book that it says, Mark was a member of the Virginia Military Institute, class of 1983, thinks he's as sane as a bucket of dirt, and checks with his mom, who claims that when he was little, she only dropped him on his head only once or twice. So joining me on Veterans Radio is author of Twisted Tales from VMI, Mark Benvenuto. Mark, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, good evening. Thanks a bunch. Love that intro.
I had to practice. One of the problems I always have with people's names is I like to add letters, and it's not right to do that.
Don't worry about it. It's very Italian, and it means welcome. Benvenuto. That's how you get it.
There, I got it now. I got it now. So, Mark, tell me about it. I have to tell you that when I sent out the flyer, I had put something in there that VMI was the West Point of the South, and I immediately got bombarded with emails from people I didn't even know listened to our program from a place called the Citadel.
Oh, no. That feud hasn't ended, has it? They're the Citadel of the South, they'll tell you, right?
There they are, the West Point of the South. And I said, oh, brother, I guess I'm going to have to give them a program as well. But anyway, so we got a response. I thought that was fun. So
it's good to know folks are listening, eh?
It is. It's, you know, because sometimes you feel like you're talking to yourself. But anyway, Mark is in our area here in Southeast Michigan. What do you do in your civilian life?
My copious free time when I'm not writing books about how crazy it was in the military. I'm a chemistry professor at the University of Detroit Mercy.
Ooh, smart guy.
Oh, come on now.
One of those intimidators, right?
Stop it. Somebody has to do the job, right?
I know. All right. So how did you get there? How did you end up at VMI?
Okay. I think like...
That's a good part.
You know, it's Veterans Radio. We all got to admit it. I think when we were 10 years old, everybody wanted to be in the Army or the Navy or Marines or something like that. You know, my dad was in the Air Force. I want to join the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us grow out of that. I just never grew out of that.
Especially in the 80s, no.
exactly.
So, well, why did you choose VMI? How come not you know, the other academies or schools?
Oh, let's give a shout-out to the people who said, hey, the Citadel is the West Point of the South. Well, I wanted to go into the service, so I... when it was time to apply for college, I applied to West Point, VMI, and the Citadel.
Okay.
That was it. And I think the Citadel and VMI accepted me with this accent. I come from up here. Actually, I come from upstate New York. And when VMI had said yes, I said, that's far enough away from home that mom won't come to visit all the time, won't drop me on my head anymore, and close enough to home that she can come visit when I need money. So that's kind of where it ended up.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. The other thing, as I was reading your book, and then I tried to do a little history background on VMI, is that it's a little more, I don't know what the term is I'm trying to think, more Spartan, I guess, can say that in Michigan, but more Spartan than it was even at West Point.
You know, they take great pride in the misery they inflict on their cadets. At least they did when I was there. That's kind of where the book ended up coming out of. Yeah, we used to joke about this. The guys, well, we still joke about this. The guys who get together here in Southeast Michigan, the chapter of alumni, for about once a month for lunch, we used to joke that we had more free time in the Army than we ever had at VMI. They had more time out of uniform and whatnot. And I always joke, well, that's why I met and married my wife, because I had so much free time. So
careful what happens with all that free time, right?
Exactly.
So when you arrived at VMI in 1979?
Yeah, very good. Fall of 79.
Okay. You were called Rats.
Oh, yes, we were.
What's a rat?
Oh, come on. Anybody at the bottom of a military totem pole has to have some sort of horrid title, right? So I guess at the academies, they're, what is it, at West Point, they're plebes. I forget what they are, what the lowest-ranking midshipman is at Annapolis. But VMI, they called you rats. And so for the rest of eternity, you're apparently everybody who went in together were all brother rats.
Okay. So you were a rat. And how well were you received at VMI?
Oh, with all the 80 decibel pleasures that, you know, any guy with a bad haircut can give to you. So, as I recall, they took a 3x5 card with your name on it, pinned it to your T-shirt, or and then eventually your white shirt, and you ran around with that for a week till they got you decent name tags. And then, what was the name, Benvenuto, you just said about having problems? Trust me, every guy from Virginia couldn't pronounce that. Absolutely every single guy on the cadre couldn't pronounce that.
I have to relate. I can relate to that because I was stationed in Alabama, and I couldn't understand anybody there.
Understood.
So, all right. So, I mean, it's sort of a lot of physical exercise, I'm sure, a lot of mental, a lot of mental cruelty, and, you know, calling your parents various names and
Sorts of things. Anything they could do to get a rise out of you. The first week that gets called Cadre Week, which, and most universities and colleges, they have this welcome week and there's prologues and transitions. No, this week was to try and get people out instead of try and embrace you into it. So, yeah, after that, you're still a rat. You're still in the rat line and all this sort of stuff's going on. You're still at the bottom of the totem pole, but at least classes were going on. And the people that, from a rat's point of view, were the most sadistic guys in the universe at least had to go to class. And so we quickly learned that was one of those sorts of things when someone was messing with you and they would ask you these questions and you're only supposed to say yes, sir, no, sir, or no excuse, sir. When it got long, you'd kind of say, how are your grades, sir? Let it hang there.
That's true. And so we're talking with Mark Benvenuto from Twisted Tales from VMI, and we're trying to find out what life was like at VMI in the late 70s, early 80s. So did you have to eat square meals and, you know, strack the wall and all that stuff?
Oh, that stuff. Let's see. The exaggerated position of attention is what they call it, was called straining. I mean, you tucked your chin into the back of your neck if you could and had your breastbone sticking out and your arms back and all that. The square meals at the mess hall had turned into, it was called sitting at attention, where you had to sit with your feet together and whatnot. You could shovel it in as fast as you could, but you had to sit there on the front couple inches of your chair and all that. Yeah, all the usual miseries that make people sort of think, why on earth did I come here? Like I said, they did their utmost to make sure we were welcome as little as possible, and then, you know, see who falls out. And the rest of us are supposed to be tougher because we took it, right?
That's right. Yeah, we're tough. We can stand this stuff.
Exactly.
So you could shovel it in. I only did that as a warrant officer. We just had 4 weeks of officer training, and so we had to eat. You know, try to eat the square meals where, you know, to bring the spoon up and into your mouth without spilling. And if you spilled, you got demerits. And when you got demerits, you got push-ups and, you know, all this other good stuff. So it was. I found the book to be very humorous, and a lot of things I could relate to, not only from my own experiences but also from experiences of other veterans that we have talked to on our program. So from being a rat, what was the worst thing that you had to go through in that first year? What other wonderful traditions did they force you to go through?
You know, I thought you were going to come up with that question. What was the worst of all that misery? The thing at the end of the rat line, the seniors, the first class, come up with a date on when this mania is supposed to end, and you just go back into being a regular. You're a class now and go to class, and you're on the bottom of the totem pole with all the yelling and screaming ends. There was this thing called breakout. I put a chapter in there, it's 40 short stories, so it's a little short story in there about the class that didn't have breakout because the superintendent, who really is a military officer, said to their guys, hey, guess what? You got to let the rats out of the rat line with breakout in the next couple days or else. And a lot of miscommunication there. But when I was there, it was a sort of ritualized combat. No one was supposed to actually get killed or broken legs or anything, but you had to charge up these three flights of stairs up to the fourth floor because the barracks was like a figure eight open to the sky, and you basically had to get up there with all these guys fighting you, trying to keep it down. The rules where you weren't supposed to throw any body fluids or dead animals, who would enforce such rules? The fact that they had to make them means people were doing that. That was pretty much a long-term memory that, now that you've mentioned it, I'll probably dream about again tonight.
I know. You'll start therapy again tomorrow.
Exactly.
Did you guys live on particular floors? Did you move up in the dorm as you went through the program?
Other way around. Your rat year, when you were a fourth classman, you were up there on the fourth floor of the barracks. And because there's attrition all the time, a few guys lived on the third. They put them all together. But every year you moved down one. So your sophomore year, which was called your third class year, you were down on the third floor. Your second class year, which is your junior year, you're down on the second floor. And your first class year, your senior year, you're finally down at the bottom. The rationale for that, why people wanted it that way, is it's quicker to get to class if you don't have to go down four flights of stairs.
That's true. Or get back to your room for inspection.
And all that sort of stuff, exactly, yeah.
Tell me about George Washington, the statue thereof.
You know, some of our listeners may have seen that George Washington. That George Washington statue at what was called Washington Arch is in Lexington, Virginia. I believe there is one in Richmond, Virginia. And I'm not making this up. I've seen the same statue at the side of Trafalgar Square in London. The reason it's over at the side of Trafalgar Square, we apparently gave it to the British, another copy of this famous statue. Oh, yes, and there's a smaller version at Mount Vernon. We gave the one to the British, and they weren't sure in the First War which side we were coming out at.
Oh.
We gave it to them, I think, in 1915. So they put it in cold storage till 1921, then they popped Georgie up on the side of Trafalgar Square. Nelson's much higher than him because, you know, he's the British hero. But, yeah, one year I was sleeping in a room that was over Washington Arch, they called it. I heard this bizarre crinkling sound that I couldn't peg down. You know, there's times you should just let it go. Just go to sleep. No, not me. I stuck my head out the window. These two maniacs are out there TPing George. They're wrapping him up in that big industrial roll of toilet paper. I mean, cane and hands and everything except the head. They put this gigantic pumpkin over his head, and I'm completely mystified. You know, I think we've just been done with a rat line. I'm looking out the window, and finally I just yell down to these two bozos, "Why are you doing this?" And, you know, you shouldn't ask these whys, because there's always no reason. There's never any good reason. One guy looks up and goes, "Hey, man, it's tradition." Oh, sure. Okay, thanks. Good night. I'm going back to bed. Yeah, and George stood there and took it all.
Poor George.
Poor guy.
Let's remind our audience just real quickly that BMI has a very excellent reputation for turning out incredible military officers. Other than
thank you very
classmates.
Much. George Patton started there, but he was crazy enough to do West Point as well, so he sort of did the rat line twice. General Marshall, George C. Marshall, is the only five-star Army general who did not go to West Point, went to VMI.
Mm-hmm.
And God knows there's plenty of other ones that have gone there.
How did you mentioned going to Virginia from Michigan. How did that play out when again, I know when I went down south to go to my basic training and stuff, being from the north, I was immediately a Yankee. That was the, you know, and the War of Secession.
Oh, come on now. It was the War of Northern Aggression down there,
right.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, it was. Yes, we were the aggressors on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to get some emails on that one, but that's all right. So what was your experience like? I mean, I know it was funny, and this is like – folks, this reading this story is like any of us out there who went to college at the same time or any time and, you know, had to go through some of the traditions that Mark is talking about. And some of them are just so outrageous. You can't wonder. You wonder why people even thought of them. And then, you know, as you mentioned earlier, they come up with rules against them.
Yep.
And you're going, they had to come up with a rule to stop them from killing
themselves.
Because
somebody was doing that, exactly.
Yes.
No, I said I came from upstate New York. I don't know if you remember this one, but we both may be old enough. In the 1970s, late 1970s, New York was trying to get more people to come visit. You remember that advertising jingle about I Love New York?
Yeah, the heart.
Oh, my God. You had to, when the upperclassmen stopped you and said, you know, sound off, you had to say your name, your last name, your initials, and the where you're from. And so mine was always Benvenuto M.A., Henrietta, New York. And when they heard New York and they heard that Yankee accent, they would swarm around, sing it, sing it, sing it, rat. And, oh, God, I'm sitting there singing, I love New York. And, you know, I didn't join the Glee Club for perhaps rather obviously, you know.
For a reason.
Obvious reason. Yeah, exactly. And so, I don't know. And if they didn't like it or I didn't sing it well enough, it was off key, it was more push-ups. I was pretty strong by the end of the rat line. You know, you're a real Weisenheimer, and you're a Yankee, and you can't sing. And yeah, I ended up doing a lot of push-ups.
I know. You know, push-ups are good for you.
Yeah, apparently they built character because one of the guys that I on purpose put some words in the back of his mouth and put them on the back of the book. He said, "Yeah, you're a character, man. You built a lot of character that way."
Speaking of character, we need to take a real quick break, Mark. We'll be right back in just a minute with Mark Benvenuto, and the book is Twisted Tales from VMI. We'll be right back after this on Veterans Radio. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we are talking with Mark Benvenuto of VMI. And so we're talking about the experiences of spending 4 years in that wonderful institution in Lexington, Virginia.
4 years in the same clothes, right? Never had to decide what to wear in the morning.
That is a good deal. I had forgotten that about the military. Yes, that's true. I never had to decide which color I was going to wear.
I think that's fishing for the silver lining, but at least we found one, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me about some of these other unusual roommates that you might have had that somehow survived their 4 years.
Oh, there was a good bunch. The guy I quoted on the back there about saying I was in need of serious psychiatric help. Matt was son of a military family. I believe I got it right in saying his great grandfather, his grandfather, his father I know, and his older brother all went to VMI.
Oh,
so yeah, he was kind of expected to go there. Mm-hmm. Let's see, the other two that make it in there with pseudonyms, the one who's Brad Dunbar in the book, actually ended up as a colonel in the United States Marine Corps. He was a real Marines Marine all the way through. He used to win the cadet awards for something or other almost every year, and I think it was senior year. Now, this is long before the internet or anything like that. He called his dad about something he wanted, and he came back and he said, he was from Texas. He says, "My dad ain't going to come," he says, "and he told me unless I win the Medal of Honor." His dad was fine with his son winning a bunch of other stuff. And the fourth one who goes by was a Marcus Greenhoe in the book there. He ended up becoming a civil engineer, did several years in the Army along with me and Matt. And then I think he's in Colorado right now. He and I don't keep in touch as much as we should. But, yeah, I guess we all came out of it sort of alive despite some of the ridiculous crap we did, including, I think you said you read the book. You remember that one about the turtle, about bringing a turtle in from a biology field trip or whatever? That really happened. That wasn't an embellished, made-up story or anything like that. My roommate brought that silly turtle in. We were trying to keep it in a shoebox to see if the TAC officers wouldn't find it. I think it ate its way out of the shoebox and crapped on my bed and all sorts of things. And, like, the place wasn't weird enough without a turtle in your room that you were trying to keep from the TAC staff, you know?
Well, you know, those guys come in and destroy a room.
Yeah.
If they're anything like my TAC officers were.
Yeah, exactly. They'd tear it all apart. Find a dang turtle down there. So,
well, they tear it all apart.
Eventually, we got rid of them.
Yeah, they tear it apart and say, "This room is a mess."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, some things haven't changed, and it doesn't matter where you go. I'd be willing to bet every single vet listening to this has that fond experience of cleaning a room up to a perfect military order just to have some inspector tear it back to shreds and then tell you it's a mess.
It's a mess. We had a guy, he threw all our mattresses out the window.
Yep.
Every single one of them, because they weren't made correctly.
Correctly. Or the one I always enjoyed, and I learned that first rat year that there is no correct answer to the question I'm about to pose. They get done, they tear it all to shreds, and they say something to you about how it looks, and then they say, "Do I look stupid to you?"
Oh, it's tempting.
You know, there's no good answer to that. "Yes, sir," is incorrect. "How stupid do you think you look, sir," is also incorrect. There's a whole bunch of varieties there, and all of them are incorrect.
I know. You always have to say, "Sir, in my opinion."
That's right. My humble opinion, sir, well, you look stupider than a lot of people I know. That got a lot of push-ups, too. I mean, heck, everything seemed to end up with push-ups.
Thank you, Mark. This is fun.
This is a silly trip down memory lane, right?
It is, and that's the point. And I want to, you know, again, this book is Twisted Tales from VMI. It's available on Amazon, and where else can they buy it?
I authored it through Friesen Press, so you can go to just one word, Friesen Press, Friesen, friesenpress.com. It's a little cheaper there.
Okay.
But you can buy it, as you said, at Amazon.com. If anybody's listening from all the way from Lexington, Virginia, the fine folks at the VMI bookstore, I called them and they say, oh, you're Mark Benvenuto. Hey, we've actually got your book. So they've already got the book there.
Oh, great.
If you want to pick it up at the bookstore there.
There you go. Head on down to VMI.
Yeah, Friesen Press or Amazon.com will do the trick.
Okay. We got about, 4 minutes left? Okay. As you head toward the end of the hour, what was it like when you finally got to be the top rat or the lower rat, the head cheese there?
Yeah, the top dog, the first classman. Strangely anticlimactic. I know that when I was the rat, I thought to myself, these guys have got to be the baddest people ever who walked the face of the earth. The only thing that kept me going sometimes when things were bad was the thought of what my mother's face would look like if I had to go home and say I failed.
Then
when I was up there on the top of the totem pole, I thought to myself, I feel strangely like I always have. You know, I don't feel Supermanish or anything like that. So, I don't know. Maybe it's all a big illusion, right?
I guess so. You went all the way through the whole thing without appearing to attract any real attention other than doing push-ups until your final year when they made you some sort of leader.
Yeah, it was first class year, senior year. That every class had to actually meet up and outside a building, call roll, and go into the classroom. And that person was called the section marcher. And I did everything to skate even under that radar. And one of my professors forced me to be the section marcher. So, yeah, I had a friend in that class come up to me one time and said, "Could you be a worse section marcher? Because it'll give us a little more time after the bugle blows if we're late. Could you, like, you know, drop your pencil and do a bunch of things and scratch yourself and whatnot?" You know, you look at this guy and think, we're paying to be educated here, and you're telling me to make it 5 minutes less of class each day. What do you say to something like that? I just listened to him and then was, you know, complete stupidity, said, "Yeah, sure.
Okay, so. I can do that."
Exactly.
Well, as we approach the end of the hour here today, I strongly recommend this book. This is just a really fun read, Mark.
Thank you.
And it does bring back a lot of unusual behaviors from people I knew and things I'm not going to admit to.
Well, and I'll be the first to say that when I argued it out with my editor, sticking VMI in the title, they said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Trust me, the alumni are pretty rabidly loyal." I said, "But if you put this down as military humor, I don't care where you went to school. I don't care where you went to basic training." I said, "You're going to read this thing. You're going to get a few laughs out of it because it's going to be recognizable." And sounds like you had that, and I appreciate it.
Well, it was great, and we're going to talk to everybody we can about this book. And when I get the guys from the Citadel on, you can give them a call. And
you want to have me back on, and we can have that Citadel VMI feud, and you can officiate. I'll be fine.
I'd be happy to do that. I think it was fun, Mark. It was a pleasure having you on. You're a funny guy and a joy to have on the program, and thank you very much. And we will be in touch with you.
Thank you very much. Take it easy now.
I will do that.
Have a good night.
Thank you. All right. Well, that was that. I'm strongly suggesting to anybody out there who's been in the military, if you had any barracks experience, that this is something that you should read, because it was it brought a lot of chuckles and smiles to my face and reminded me of a lot of experiences that we all had to go through. We're going to end up our program today on kind of a special note. You know, this week Merle Haggard passed away, and Merle has been a strong supporter throughout his career, and we have played many songs on our program from Merle Haggard, and so we're going to go out with one of his today. And so I want to say thank you to Merle for all of the music that he provided to us. And to all the people of the world, of course, and I think it's going to be very poignant. And, you know, it's not one of his sad songs. I think it's one that you'll recognize, but I think it should be very well done. We're going to pause. You are dismissed.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take our trips on LSD. We don't burn our draft cards down on Main Street. 'Cause we like living right and being free. We don't make a party out of loving. but we like holding hands and pitching wood. We don't let our hair grow long and shaggy like the hippies out in San Francisco do. And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, a place where even squares can have a fall. We still wave old glory down at the courthouse. White lightning still the biggest thrill of all. Leather boots are still in style for manly footwear. Beads and Roman sandals won't be seen. And football still the roughest thing on campus. And the kids here still respect the college dean. And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, a place where even squares can have a ball. We still wave old glory down at the courthouse. White lightning still the biggest thrill of all. And white lightning still the biggest thrill of all.